Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to the Corbett Reports. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you in December of 2024. But if you can cast your mind back all the way to 2022, you might remember episode 414 of the Corbett Report on the future of censorship, where I laid out the rather relatively, on the big scheme of things, minor case of digital repersoning that was happening to me at that time as I was freshly scrubbed off of YouTube. And yet there were all these Corbett Report YouTube channels popping up that seemed to be me, but were started in July of 2021 by someone in Morocco and were haphazardly, randomly uploading some of my videos some of the time, and I was being accused of censoring myself. It was a bizarre situation. If you don't remember that, I hope you will take a look back at episode 414, because I went into not only what was happening to me at that time, but the greater question of digital repersoning and the future of censorship itself, perception management. It's a pretty deep, dark rabbit hole. And as relatively innocuous as the digital repersoning of me on YouTube was at that time, well, it's becoming more serious in this age of deepfakes and AI-created monstrosities, as our guest today unfortunately knows all too well, and I am referring to the one, the only Whitney Webb of UnlimitedHangout.com, who deserves a great deal of introduction, but who needs none, because all of my listeners already follow all her work. If not, obviously, get on board. UnlimitedHangout.com is the place to go. But let's bring her on board. Whitney, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, James. It's my pleasure.
Yes, and what an interesting conversation we have today. So, all right, I've set the table, but you tell us, what is happening to you in this digital repersoning future of censorship land that we're living in these days?
Yeah, so like you, you know, I've had accounts that pop up on platforms where I don't exist, claiming to be me. Mainly on Facebook, where I don't have an account. And, you know, they mix together all sorts of stuff that I do say on the one social media account, conventional social media account I do have, which is Twitter. They'll post some of that and then add things like, Elon Musk is our Lord and Savior, and things I would never say. So kind of muddying the waters, but that isn't really the biggest problem I'm facing. So the biggest problem in terms of like impersonation and repersoning has actually been happening to me on YouTube, and it started during this period where I wasn't really active, probably for most of last year and the first part of this year. I have my young son who's about two, had a major health crisis. I was in a hospital for like almost a year. And so I wasn't doing as many interviews. So then these channels started clipping old interviews I had done and then basically editing them into like documentaries, I guess, about stuff I've never talked about. Like CERN, for example. And it's not like I don't think there's anything nefarious going on at CERN, right? But it's something I've never reported on or have ever publicly really spoken about. And, saying that I like think, there's a black hole at CERN and all of this stuff. Well, that's not really what I'm saying. And then it started happening also. I had one appearance in January on a rather large Bitcoin podcast called What Bitcoin Did that got like a million views. And after that, all of these finance YouTube channels started taking clips from that and then superimposing their narration after showing an actual clip of my interview saying that I was shilling a particular token or coin, which I have never done. I do not give financial advice. I've never told people to buy any financial product, including Bitcoin, even though I have, been on some Bitcoin podcasts over the years. And I really see it as an effort to sort of make it look like I have positions I don't have. And there's a lot of different purposes that could potentially serve. And then some of them, too, have attempted to repurpose my Epstein work and lead people to the conclusion that I somehow think it's a partisan issue and not a bipartisan issue, which is unfortunately something that I think certain actors perhaps hoped that I would push my work in that direction, but declined to do so. And so instead, these repersoning people have essentially attempted to do that against, everything I've tried to say or put out in terms of my own work and opinion and analysis. And really, it's very troubling because some of these YouTube videos have gotten over 1 million views. Some of them, you know, multiple ones above 100,000. And a lot of people have shared them, including well-known people in media have reshared them or retweeted them or put them out on their social media accounts, thinking it's actually my interview. And it's not. You know, for example, one particularly big social media account, David Icke, who I don't blame him for this, but he shared one of these repersoning videos that had an interview of me talking about digital ID. And in the beginning, it said that I blamed all the New World Order stuff on Emmanuel Macron of France and Klaus Schwab, which I did not do. I definitely make it very clear. I think there's a transnational power structure. I didn't blame just two people, but they kept repeating this. And I've never even written an article about Macron. Not that I don't think he's bad. He's a career Rothschild banker, but it's not something I've reported on. So people are basically putting words in my mouth and they're getting tons of views and basically making it very difficult for me to kind of get out what I actually think and believe to people. And it's been unfortunately very effective. And as I said earlier, started really happening and picking up at a time where I wasn't very active online and was dealing with a very serious, you know, personal family crisis and couldn't really respond and be there to monitor all of this.
Man, that is crazy. And I can only imagine how enraging that must be, because even the relatively minor way that was happening to me was enraging at the time. But my God, that's crazy. All right. So there's so much to dig into here. But before we do, I think it's probably good to get a couple of things on the table. Number one, for people who are concerned about, have I been fooled by some sort of deepfake Whitney Webb impersonator? How can they know that it is you speaking? Where should they go for information about what you actually believe and say?
Yeah, really the only way to do that is sign up for my newsletter on unlimitedhangout.com, or you can follow, the Unlimited Hangout has a Telegram account. Whitney Webb, myself, I don't have a public channel, but people have attempted to make them. And then I have a Twitter account, and that's it. So, you can follow those things, but I don't know how much longer I'm really going to be on Twitter either, as that, you know, sort of progresses into a very extreme tool of perception management, as we can discuss later.
And then what if you get scrubbed off? What if Elon decides, I don't want Whitney on there anymore, and someone takes your account? It happened to me on YouTube, so don't know.
Yeah, I think it absolutely could happen. And if they wanted to, let's remember back to after COVID, right? So right after COVID started, there was a collapse of trust in the system. And the main, point of discussion at a lot of the World Economic Forum, closed door annual meetings was rebuilding trust. And so, you know, there's obviously the cases where they take a figure they control from the beginning and manufacture trust in that figure. But they can also take people that have created trust through like integrity in their work and years of being consistent and things like that, and then deperson them off the social media platform or whatever, and reperson them as saying something entirely different for the purpose of narrative control and perception management ultimately. So unfortunately that hasn't. Yeah. Well, also it's worth considering that I think this is going to be the new way to really go after people like you and me, James, because when someone gets canceled, it can expand their reach and audience, right? Mm-hmm. Cancel culture has been used to create very prominent figures like Andrew Tate, for example, and the Weinstein brothers, all sorts of, people that have become rather famous after a canceling style event. So to have someone be canceled and censored and allow them to be like, I was censored because of this, tends to be a way that they can build a trust in someone. But if you want to weaponize it against someone who isn't going to play that game, this seems to be the way they're gearing up to do it, unfortunately.
You're right. It's like when some person gets canceled and goes on Joe Rogan to announce, I've been canceled on the biggest podcast in the world, or Tucker Carlson listen, I've been canceled from Fox yes. News. Now follow me over here. Yeah, it's a very different thing than, yeah, someone like you or myself getting kicked off of a social media site and being repersoned. So, okay, there are so many things going through my head right now. One of which that you bring to mind is actually, now that I really think about it, I guess I had a taste of this years and years and years ago. I can't even remember. It must have been at least a decade ago. I was at some conference or other in person, meeting some people in actual person. And I remember someone asking me about something that I'd posted on Facebook. Like, do you really think that? And I remember saying at the time, I'm not on Facebook. I have no idea what you saw or where you saw it. And he's like, no, there's a James Corbett report on Facebook. And I'm like, I don't know who that is. It ain't me. So now that I think about it, I guess I was primed to think about this particular form of digital repersoning years in advance. And God, I hate being able to see these things before they come to fruition and then seeing them come to fruition and still trying to ring the alarm bell about it. Anyway, okay, so let's get into I think the basic level of analysis of this, let's just do problem, reaction, solution on this. There's clearly a problem of digital repersoning. And as I say, people have seen this in many different forms. I remember a year or two ago, there was some sort of Rumble commenter, James Corbett, who was trying to shill people on some financial advice or some garbage like that. And I made a video just warning people about that. Everyone's seen that kind of thing. Okay, so it's a problem. That we have the reaction, this is crazy, this isn't me, what are we going to do about it? The solution is simple, just some sort of blockchain-based digital ID, right? This is where this is going.
Yeah, well, sure, but I think beyond just that, the goal is to have everyone link their biometric digital ID first to a social media account, and we've had people like Elon Musk promote this even before he bought Twitter, saying we need to authenticate all real humans that use the platform to resolve the quote-unquote bot problem on Twitter, which obviously it's there, but what he doesn't really say is that a lot of those bots are run by militaries, including the U.S. military, which he contracts for example. But yeah, it's a pretty extensive issue.
Yes, absolutely it is. So let's okay, first of all, you've done a lot of work on digital ID. I will direct people to that. I'll throw in the links to, for example, the article that you co-authored with Ian Davis about SDGs mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. how that ties into UN SDG agenda, the ID 2020, the DIA and UIDAI in India and BGMF and all these other incredible acronyms. Can you sort through this mess for us? Who is behind the digital ID agenda? How does this tie into the digital currency agenda that you're talking about these days? And where is this going from here?
Yeah, sure. So ultimately, a lot of this, you know, repersoning that we just talked about, yeah, I think ultimately the goal is to herd people into manufacturing consent for some sort of digital ID system, with the goal of having that system being connected to all of your internet access through your internet service provider or ISP, and also to your social media account, with the goal of really having you have a formal government ID linked profile of everything you read and consume online, as a way to get around repersoning and the bot issue and all of these things. So who's behind this larger agenda? Well, it's not just one person. It's not just two people. It's a lot bigger than that. You know, all of these global policy agendas that are somehow being implemented in lockstep globally obviously have a transnational group behind them. I think that's quite clear. And there's no shortage of cheerleaders for that agenda in the United States, whether it's team left or team right. And the same is true elsewhere. It's just really the sales pitches to get people to adopt them are different. So, you know, on the right, it's being framed as a way to stop illegal immigration. On the left, it's being framed as a way to stop hate speech and stop cyberbullying online and protect children and all sorts of things like that. Really just looking for whatever metric sticks with whatever demographic they want to placate ultimately. So there's several groups that are behind it. A lot of it ultimately goes back, if you look at, you know, some of these entities that kickstart the digital ID push under the auspices of the United Nations, like the ID 2020 Alliance, which has now been folded into another alliance with essentially all of the same funders. But ultimately, ID 2020 was started by, you know, groups like Microsoft, the Rockefeller Foundation, Accenture, some of these big multinational corporations, or in the case of the Rockefeller Foundation, you know, the philanthropic arms of oligarchic clans that have tried to create a global system of financial control in private hands for the better part of the last 100 years. And so ultimately, digital ID is meant to sort of facilitate that kind of system globally. But I don't think it's likely that they're going to sell it as one universal digital ID for everybody. They want it to be vendor agnostic, but have it all have sort of similar standards and have the data all be exportable in the same format. So, you know, maybe you'll have in the US, for example, 5 or 6 or even 10 different vendors of digital ID, and Japan will have 5 to 10 and what have you. But ultimately, all of that data, whether the US, Japan, or anywhere else in the world, can all be exported in the same format to the same centralized database, which is ultimately the goal, right? And then technically you do have a centralized system of digital ID, but it looks to be decentralized at the superficial layer. And that is also the goal too with the digital currency push. And because it's not just central bank digital currencies, there's also the issue of private bank digital currencies, which are also just as surveillable and seizable and programmable as CBDCs would be. They're just in the hands of private banks. And do you think JP Morgan would behave any better than the Federal Reserve when JP Morgan is one of the biggest, you know, controllers of the Federal Reserve? I mean, honestly, it's kind of a false dichotomy at the end of the day. You can get that kind of, liberty killing money from either the private or the public sector. And what will likely happen is a public-private partnership, the preferred model of all of these groups, UN included. And so I think ultimately that's where this is going to lead us. And they want it to obviously be connected to your online activity. So if you want to use the internet for economic activity, for social activity, or education, or anything else, you will have to have a digital ID and connect it to your ability to get online. And then obviously there's a push to have turn basically social media giants into banks. There's a big push for this with X, Twitter, presumably, you know, it was Facebook originally that tried to start the stablecoin Libra Diem project that has since, you know, been turned into, after it was shut down, went to populate USDC and some of these companies that are working on the Lightning Network on Bitcoin, like David Marcus's LightSpark and some of those things. So there's efforts to revive that and ultimately kind of link it to some sort of gig economy, I guess you could say, based on how much of people's attention you can get on these social media platforms and, you know, what your metrics are in terms of likes and clicks. But are you even dealing with real people? Are you even, presumably you would be, right, if everyone has an ID, but that's not necessarily true when you consider that a lot of governments are the people running the bots right now. It's pretty much an admitted thing that militaries around the world own and control bot farms. They use them for narrative management. In the case of the U.S. military, the Air Force specifically started researching how to use social media to control people like drones. That's literally what they say. In 2014, and now you have a Pentagon contractor, you know, running Twitter and X. Do you think that Elon Musk would demand that the Pentagon's bot farm, when he works for the Pentagon, that they all register and have their stuff online? But it will create that perception that there are no bots. These are all real, authentic people.
Exactly.
And I think that's ultimately the goal.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is so important because, as you say, they're going to sell the digital ID for different flavors of political stripes. And, you know, it's the left, it's hate speech and misinformation. On the right, it's going to be, we have to, you know, get those illegals out of the country. But here's something that can unite everyone, is this type of digital repersoning thing. We're just canaries in the coal mine who happen to have a public digital presence, so it's easy to do. But soon it'll be everyone is finding that there's people impersonating them online, and, whoa, what are we going to do about that? But yes, it goes so much deeper, because exactly as you were saying, yes, the digital ID will solve that problem, right? But actually, it will make it just so much easier to create completely fictitious entities out of thin air. They will be able to create the digital ID credentials for these beings that don't exist, that will be completely AI, 100% deepfake, not real persons, that will be populating all of these social media platforms. And for what purpose? Exactly as you were saying before, they're freaking out about building trust and getting trust and perception management. These are the things that they're talking about at Davos and Bilderberg year after year. Of course they're going to use these services to create influencers. I mean, what is the concept of influencer? What is the point of that? And where is that going? It's going to be these digital creations, whether repersoned people like the fake Whitney Webb or just some new entity that comes on the scene and takes it by storm and isn't even a real person. Man, this gets dark pretty quickly. Talk about where you see this going.
Yeah, ultimately where I see this going is really where I see the powers that be, how they plan to use AI and what they plan to do to humanity with it. So I guess about a year ago, or maybe a little, I can't remember the exact date, but I wrote a piece for Catherine Austin Fitz's Solari Report, which was basically a summary of what some of the architects of artificial intelligence, at least in the United States, see as you know, what the real promise of AI is and where it will take us and what they anticipate will happen. And so I looked at this book by Eric Schmidt and Henry Kissinger called The Age of AI, Our Human Future. And one of the reasons I did that is because Eric Schmidt was the lead of the National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence. He has styled himself as Kissinger's heir and did this before Kissinger died. And ultimately, you know, has basically created the roadmap that the U.S. national security state will use in guiding its implementation of artificial intelligence. So this is someone who's very important to listen to. He's also on the steering committee of Bilderberg, alongside Peter Thiel, the anti-Schmidt, supposedly, but who's definitely on board for all of this stuff as well, despite his slightly different rhetoric and obviously a very different, well-oiled PR machine that makes him appear to be something that he is not. So in that book, basically, and I think this is very revealing, Kissinger and Schmidt essentially say that the real promise of AI, it's not in making life more convenient and all of this stuff that us plebs are told. The real promise is that it will forever alter how humanity perceives and processes reality. And so there's a lot of implications for that. You know, on social media and on the internet in general, and in talking about, you know, the flow of information in AI, they essentially say that the content is going to be produced mostly by AI, and then AI will censor the content as well. So even if you're in this sort of paradigm where you have a digital ID and you're on the internet and you think you're dealing only with real people and real bots, you're still going to be essentially living in an AI soup. And so the AI, you know, censor bot will probably be censoring real people and not the AI slop. But the goal is ultimately to have it be about perception management, and ultimately the kind of world they envision is one where people depend on AI to tell them what is real and what is not. And that this is really the only way to deal with AI-powered misinformation. And honestly, it makes, you know, no sense. It's basically like AI is creating this problem, and so the solution is to essentially put AI in charge of everything and have it be processor, sort of the processor of reality for us. And they also make these other arguments that as humans become more and more dependent on AI, including for perceiving reality, humans will lose the ability to do it themselves and will sort of be in this place where they have to use AI to understand what's going on and become, and that humanity as a consequence will just become so easily manipulated to really unprecedented degrees. And when you consider all the profiling that's happened on people based on their online activity over the last 20 years, if you don't think they know how to manipulate you, they absolutely do. And even people like you and me, James, I'm sure, you know, we can be fed stuff that riles us up, even though, you know, we're kind of seasoned in this world, and obviously it's going to happen to anyone else too. The name of the game is to try and manipulate people emotionally, because then you're not thinking critically, and with the goal of having you sort of outsource as much of your thinking as possible to an algorithm, so it will do it for you, with the end goal of, you know, people really losing the ability to think. But again, you know, in this book, they don't think that's going to happen to everyone. They say there's going to be a two-tier society, the top tier being the people who are cognitively enhanced by AI and regulate AI and program it and decide its objective function and what have you. And then there will be the people that AI acts upon, which is, you know, basically the underclass, who know something is happening and basically they're being experimented on, but don't really know what to do about it or how to explain it and whatever. And over time, those are the ones that become, as they say, cognitively diminished. So basically, this is a war for over perception at the end of the day. And the goal is to basically keep you from being able to do it yourself. So, you know, I think that pretty makes it pretty clear that a solution to this is to really, you know, if we want to avoid this very disturbing post-human future laid out by people like Schmidt and Henry Kissinger, we very quickly have to build a post-social media and post-smartphone world, or we will just basically become, you know, these cognitively diminished goblins that can't do anything for ourselves, even think for ourselves, or even make decisions for ourselves, or even decide our own preferences, to have AI do all of that for us. And it's, you know, it's completely insane.
It is absolutely insane. But you make a couple of really important points that I want to pick up on. One is that, yes, I think there are two types of people. People who know that they can be tricked and manipulated and deceived and have their emotions played with, etc. And people who think that they can't. Oh, I won't be tricked by that sort of stuff. And I always look at people who say that and think, you will be the most gullible. You will be the most easily manipulated if you really think that you can't be, oh, I couldn't possibly be tricked by this stuff. You have no idea how sophisticated this stuff can be. But it does raise the question of the real solution. And you phrased that actually in a wonderful way, because I'm sitting here trying to think of any way. There seems to be two paths forward. And one is that sort of AI arms race. We need our own personal AI bots and personal assistants to protect us from the bad AI. And we need our own drones to protect us from the military drones and what have you. And it's the technological arms race. And the only other way that I can see it is kind of the Luddite version of, okay, we have to completely abandon the digital space altogether. But you phrase that interestingly, post social media. What does that mean to you? What is post-social media environment? How do we begin even conceptualizing that, let alone creating it?
Yeah, so, I mean, essentially what I mean by that is that all the large conventional social media, the ones that are widely used, and I guess really because of that, of that user base, are the most effective, even with the censorship of distributing information. Ultimately, they are weaponized perception management and narrative control battlefields that are only going to get, you know, the ante is only going to be upped more and more and more and more, making it more aggressive and really making the risk-benefit analysis of, you know, regular people that actually want truth, or, you know, actual journalists that don't feel like selling out or praying at the altar of Elon Musk. You know, it's going to be very hard to access or distribute information effectively on that platform, and that we should stop looking at it as the public square, the town square, or whatever. It is a war zone. It should be treated as such. We should be off them as much as possible. So really to that, I see the solution as, if you want to follow people, use an RSS feed reader, sign up for people's newsletters, take it back to email. You don't need social media to feed you the content that you want to see. You should, by now, if you've been following, you know, accounts or people in independent media long enough, know who you like, know who you don't, and then try and aggregate through RSS or other means, you know, some sort of, you know, your own proprietary, really, news feed that isn't censored, and you can access information that way without having to dip a toe into, you know, these militarized and weaponized platforms that, you know, frame themselves as a place where everyone has a seat at the table, and that's absolutely not what's happening. And then, you know, some groups like the Independent Media Alliance, which I am a part of, are working with Odyssey to create some sort of aggregate thing that would be like an RSS, but for, you know, accounts that are part of the IMA group, that would have sort of, that wouldn't have any algorithmic censorship. It would just be, you know, the most recent videos there, and you could sort of follow accounts, sort of like the feel of social media without the drawbacks, really, in a sense. So, you know, obviously there can be other initiatives to do that. And I believe Odyssey is working on sort of allowing that functionality to be opened up to other groups as well, through this thing that they're calling portals. So maybe that's something to look at as well. But really, you know, there's plenty of solutions and things that people could look at. But ultimately, what I mean is, you know, these are weaponized places. The goals are very clearly laid out of what they aim to do. And basically, I think it's pretty clear by now, is to gain your trust and make you think that these big tech billionaires care about the working class and care about you. And the psyops on that front are only going to get worse and more intense and more aggressive. And I would argue that, you know, in the past 2 to 3 months, they've already gotten very aggressive. And I think it's only really going to get significantly worse, you know, over the next couple of years. And obviously, it's going to be worse once you have to link a government-issued ID to access them. I presume that that will be first before they force you to have it to be on the internet, period. But that is the ultimate goal. And I think independent media should prepare for that eventuality as well. Something Unlimited Hangout is looking at doing, maybe towards the second half of next year, is getting into print and trying to just go back to the physical a little bit, mix some digital with physical, because ultimately the ultimate uncensorable thing is a book, right? Or a magazine. I think, you know, people in independent media should consider that as well. You know, we have to adapt, and we can't just be dependent on the media, on the algorithm and on social media, because most people that are have already sold out, frankly. People that have been in independent media for a long time have just become obsessed with click metrics and follower counts and how many Musk bucks they can make on Twitter these days. So, you know, again, that's very unfortunate. And in that case, you don't really have to, you know, the government doesn't have to directly buy them out. They can just use financial incentives to get people to alter their reporting or their stances that way. Right. So you know, I think it's very important that we move off of social media as quickly as possible.
I couldn't agree more. And you make such an important point there that really puts things into perspective for me, because I realize now that, yes, I have seen people, real people, who have absolutely been manipulated by these algorithms already. The people who have done whatever verbal gymnastics and backflips and self-censorship that they needed to do in order to maintain their YouTube channel or whatever it is, have already sold out to the algorithm. And it only gets worse from here. At the very, 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 very least, I would hope that people keep in mind what you have said here, in terms of, at the very least, if you are on these social media platforms, be aware, this is a battlefield, and you are the target. You are being targeted by information operations that you probably don't even know are happening, and it is a battlefield, and people are just waltzing into it, like, hey, no problem, hey, this is fun. There's such incredibly deeply important topics going on here, and probably too many threads to sort out in this one conversation, but thank you very much for putting this all on the table, Whitney. But I just have one final question for you. How do I know this is really Whitney Webb?
Oh man, I don't know. I think at this point, I don't know if it's me and I'm actually talking. I don't think the deepfakes have been that extreme, because so far they've been, like I said earlier, they've been using clips from my real videos. They'll use AI thumbnails of me, like AI thumbnails of me, of like something that looks like me, but I'm like crying in my hands and being like, I'm unsafe, they're coming after me. I mean, stuff I've like literally never said. It's totally bonkers. So for now, the AI, you know, deep faking of me is limited to thumbnails And then people sort of superimposing a narration after an actual clip of my interview, saying I said things later on in that interview I didn't actually say. So I guess for the moment, you know, if it's actually me talking, it's me. But who knows? I mean, obviously there's technology to make that not the case in the future. And so I think, as you and I both said earlier, this is only going to get worse. If you want to know what I'm actually saying, you can sign up for my newsletter. All the interviews I actually do are put into that. And then on the social media accounts I currently have, but again, it's not going to be safe for very long for some of the reasons that we just discussed. So again, it's important to look at some of these other ideas I mentioned, like RSS feed, the IMA Odyssey platform when it's out, and some of these other options to ensure that you're actually getting the viewpoints of the people you're following and not some made up slop that's either meant to discredit me or meant to manipulate you into a certain direction. All we can really do is try and go as far back to the direct to the source as much as possible. Otherwise, we risk sort of subjecting ourselves to these kind of, you know, increasingly insane manipulations that are honestly very tiring. And there really isn't much I can do about it. I can denounce, I can say they're not me, you know, which I have done, but I can't get them taken down. I can't get fake Facebooks taken down without giving Facebook a government-issued idea of mine to prove I'm really me. Oh, what do you know? And for me, that's a red line, and I'm sure for a lot of other people with integrity and independent media, it is too. You know, once I have to give a government-issued ID to be on the internet or to be on social media, I'm not going to be there, you know? So it's important to keep that stuff in mind for people. And again, what I said earlier about the AI algorithms and the ultimate goal as envisioned by Kissinger and Schmidt, it's very important to keep your ability to think intact as much as possible and realize that a lot of these AI-powered platforms are aiming to take that away from you. And again, read the sources and come to your own conclusions about this kind of stuff, but it's going to be really hard to do that if we're not aware of the type of, you know, battle we're facing in the so-called information war.
This is it. I hope people know the hour of the time, but hey, show us your fingers. AI is really bad at creating fake fingers, so that's how we know it's really... There we go. See? AI couldn't do that. Yeah. All right. Anyway, we're going to have to leave this conversation.
11 or 6 or whatever.
or like, Princess Kate's kids with the weird... Yeah, anyway, whatever. Anyway, I'm sure they'll have fun cutting this all up and running fake narrations over it, but I think we'll have to leave this here for today, but obviously we will return to this conversation in the future. Incredibly important stuff. I hope people are following you directly at Unlimited Hangout, through your newsletter, through your RSS feed, etc. I will link it all up in the show notes for people who are interested. But we'll leave it there for today. Whitney Webb, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me on. My pleasure.